Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, this is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So we just finished our monthly webinar for Stock Market Update. We have a new one scheduled for July. And because of the July 4th holiday, it's going to be the second Saturday of the month, July 9th. You can register for that at IRIradio.com. If you want to talk to us today, since this is live call-in radio, we've already done a test run on Q&A at the tail end of our webinar, but we can do more Q&A right now. All you have to do is pick up the phone and dial us at 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. One of the interesting phenomenons in the stock market is the willingness that the industry has accepted flawed theory.
Yes.
The primary fundamental foundation, that's redundant, but it's still the fact of financial theory, is that the market is efficient. That's how prices get made. And so we have the efficient market hypothesis or theory, EMH or EMT. It depends upon the book you're reading, which way they abbreviate it. Yeah. And if you've spent any time talking to the younger generation about much of anything, politics, economy, the market, you probably are saying, I wonder how on earth they ever thought that to be real.
Yuck. How could that have ever gotten in? How could that have ever gotten into the thought process in the first place? It's really true. But you're right, Don. It's important to remember that if modern portfolio theory, if that pie chart is actually going to work, the market needs to be efficient. That means all the prices are correct all the time, and all that's known about any security is in the market all the time. That's what it means by being an efficient market. And boy, oh boy, it's hard to wrap your head around that being true.
So let's spend a little time digging underneath the foundation, see if it falls apart. Let's take a big IPO that happened this last, it wasn't last year, it was in 2020. Electric vehicles are something that the administration is really pushing. And so there's been a lot of effort by various entrepreneurs to build, or at least propose to build, electric vehicles. And Nikola Motors is one of them, which went public in 2020. This is a zero revenue electric battery, hydrogen powered. Well, they had a semi truck and trailer. And I remember seeing the video of it going downhill. Well, it turned out that it was going downhill because gravity does that to things that don't have motors in them.
How ingenious, a gravity-powered truck. There we go. Very nice.
And the public thought, that is great. Amazon's going to be buying a ton of those things, and they brought the company public at $31 billion. Now, at the time, Ford, which has been around for a very long time, was only $28 billion. This company, Nikola, right? Worth $3 billion more, never having produced a single thing. And then on top of that, people wanted to be in the next EV startup so badly that when Nikola posted a graphic picture of their concept of what someday, if they ever had a factory, they might build, the Nikola Badger. It was a picture.
That was it. They had no design. They had no prototype. They had no plans to build it. They had a picture. They had a single graphic. That was it.
And the guy who built the company together wasn't an engineer, and he wasn't an entrepreneur. He had no sales, no proprietary technology, and no working prototypes, but investors. Rational people that they are said that's worth $31
billion. $31 billion on the basis of nothing but hype. And that does not bode well for the efficient market theory. If you can bid up a picture into a $31 billion public company, then there is no such thing as market efficiency.
So that picture went over well, and that began, yeah, or somewhere around there, began the non-fungible tokens. And an NFT, what on earth is an NFT? Well, it didn't take long, and you finally figured it out. Somebody creates a picture on their computer and then offers it for sale, promising not to create the picture ever again. So somebody ended up with an exclusive picture of a rock. You remember the pet rock craze? You didn't even have to go out and pick up rocks to sell them. All you had to do is create a picture of it, and someone paid $1 million for a picture of a rock. That's rational.
Yeah, whoever put that out there was like, oh yeah, pet rock, big deal. Watch this. You know, we're going to sell a drawing of a rock for $1 million. Sure enough, it happened.
Well, and then with all the crypto craze, somebody said, well, this is crazy. Let's make fun of this. And so they created Dogecoin. It was to make fun of other cryptocurrencies. Investors said, oh, that looks like real money. And they made it worth $100 billion last May.
Well, they were pumping it up on Twitter, and Elon Musk was on Twitter. He got involved, and everybody was like, well, if Musk is involved, this must be a real thing. And they all stood back in shock that people were just pouring money, $100 billion, into an internet joke. It's just an internet meme, and it just turned out to be a huge thing that people are still buying today.
It's worth more than both of the Vail ski resorts. Amazing.
Yeah, it's startling, yeah, that can happen. But there's no way anyone can say that's an efficient market. It's just not true.
Well, then Musk, you know, was beating up Twitter and finally announced that he was going to take it private. He was going to buy it. Take the company private.
Right.
And every time he would hit send on his Twitter account, tens of millions of billions of dollars of market value would be created. If Elon's doing it, it's got to be good. Well, and then there's
a lot of followers, and they followed with their money.
And then there's Chewy. This is an online dog food company.
Right.
And so the key guy there, Ryan Cohen, basically created a short squeeze on GameStop and took it from single digits to over $400 in 2 months after he took an activist stake in the company. So it made him a multimillionaire in very short order. This is rational as all get out.
Yeah, exactly. It's like GameStop. That was the biggest. That was probably the biggest meme stock move ever, and because of the short squeeze involved with the hedge fund company that had shorted it. But again, there is no rational way to look at that and say, "Well, this is the correct move. This is what it's actually worth." It wasn't. It was just total hype, and at a level never seen before. And they took it up to $400 a share, and there was just no basis for that whatsoever. Completely inefficient market right there.
So what's the point of this? Well, the point of this is that virtually every portfolio used or created from a major company website or from a financial advisor in their local street corner financial advisor investment shop is using efficient market theory to build portfolios in an inefficient market.
Correct.
Think about that.
And markets tend to be more efficient over extremely long time frames. And that's their out. They're like, well, we don't care about the short term. The problem is you can have your portfolio completely destroyed in the short term and the midterm if you're just ignoring it. And that's what they do. So even though they know, like you said, Don, they know the market's not efficient in the shorter term and even in the midterm, but they use it anyway. Because in the extremely long term, well, you're going to be okay as long as you live that long. But that, to us, it doesn't strike us as a good way to run your portfolio.
Well, I've never had a client say, I'll be back in 10 years to check and see how my account's doing.
Correct.
I'm waiting for that guy to show up.
Yeah, right. Haven't seen that client. Everybody's concerned. That's when people get the most concerned, especially in markets like we're in today, where things move so fast and so much that all of a sudden you can have, you know, a quarter of your portfolio just evaporate in a matter of weeks. It's not good enough to just say, well, in 10 years, it's going to be fine. That people don't live 10 years from now. You live now. You're investing now. And a lot of people need the money now and can't wait 10 years for it to come back. So it's just not a reasonable thing to ask people to do with their money.
Well, and when you think about reasonable, what would you say is reasonable about an investment, an exchange-traded fund that year-to-date is minus 72%. Would that be a reasonable buy?
I would say no, just on a wild top of my head guess. Yeah.
Well, that particular fund manager, minus 72% year-to-date, has had more than $1 billion of more new money plowed into her exchange-traded funds.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's just one more. That's the ARK fund, A-R-K-K. That's the innovation fund. And people believe in Kathy Wood's story, but you have to ask yourself, if you're down 72%, how efficient is this process and how cautious am I if I'm dumping money into that fund, knowing
absolutely that
those kinds, I mean, that kind of undermines the whole efficient market theory.
Exactly. It completely blows it out the window. And even if you think she's right, even if you think it's going to work out, how long are you willing to wait to recover a 70%+ loss? It's just not reasonable. It's not reasonable for anyone to do that, but that's what's baked into that pie chart. That's what you sign up for. They're never going to tell you that, but that's what you sign up for when you do that. And that's why we think it's so dangerous to be exposing your money to someone who doesn't care what happens this year or next year. It just doesn't matter to them. It's not part of their process, not part of their analysis. It's just not safe. Too much damage can be done too quickly, and we think it's something you should ignore. We can't ignore the time. It's time for us to get out of here for our first break of the afternoon. Like Don said right off the top, we had our...
It's morning, June, Perry. We're in the morning now. It's morning.
Oh, my goodness. One of us is. Yeah. I'll get there in a minute. I'll come to the morning. We are, as you said earlier, Don, we had our June market update webinar this morning. July is already on the calendar. It's coming up Saturday, July 9th at 9 o'clock in the morning. You can sign up for that by going to IRIradio.com. That's IRIradio.com. Just head to the webinar page and give the registration link a click. You're going to get an email back. Just save that until July 9th. And on July 9th, click that link. You'll be live on line with us. We'll be able to see the charts we're looking at, understand what's going on out there in the market to the amount that we can. And we let you know what we're doing with our portfolios. And we always have plenty of time for your questions. So if you have questions about the market or even individual securities, you'd like a second opinion on, it's a great time to get that done. Again, you can register for that at IRIradio.com. We'd love to talk to you here this afternoon. You can give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help at irradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money.
Well, I will give Kathy Woods some credit that she has moved in and out of some of her stuff. I mean, the ARC Innovation Fund is down big time this year. It's one of the biggest losers around. But she has, she's actively dumped some of the stuff before it would have been worse, I guess. But as far as the efficient market is concerned, one of the other areas of inefficiency has been proven in Bitcoin. Bitcoin, if you recall, was touted when it was first created as a computer creation. There's nothing backing it except the promise to not make more available, is that it was a new asset class and it would hold up against inflation and it would become a currency that you could buy stuff with. And there are some people who will accept currency for commerce. You end up with the risk of the pricing model for it. Now, if you have a dollar bill in your pocket and you take it out tomorrow, it's still a dollar bill. Bitcoin, not so much. Since its high in 2021, it is minus 66%. So that you got a dollar Bitcoin in your pocket and tomorrow, well, it took more than one day, but now you have 34 cents. That's not working with inflation. That's just, it's just like we demonstrated on gold in today's webinar. The assumptions people are making about how this stuff works are disconnected from reality. It doesn't really work the way the theory says it should, which means you have to pay attention and do something differently. So with the instability of cryptocurrencies, what it needed was a firm foundation. And so, I don't remember who created this, but the central banks like the Fed and the ECB and the Bank of Japan, they're all interested in creating a stable coin. And so somewhere one of them showed up. We had a stable coin that was supposed to be tied one-to-one to the U.S. dollar, which in very short order dropped to 3 cents. It erased $18 billion overnight.
Because it never really was based on the dollar. They wanted to peg it to the dollar, but not really, like other currencies do, where you have an open exchange rate. They actually pegged it to another cryptocurrency. So it was a cryptocurrency pegged to another cryptocurrency that was trying to track the dollar. Well, that's not stable, and they found that out, of course, when it, like you said, when it dropped from a buck to 3 cents in really short order.
So the question here is, most likely your portfolio is built on the assumption that markets are efficient.
Correct.
What is your time frame? If it's 20 or 30 or 50 years and you don't care what happens in the middle, you don't need your money along the way, maybe efficiency will arrive. But it certainly is not in the present market or any current market that you are concerned about. Let's just take a look at IPOs, initial public offerings, in general over the last several years. There have been plenty of them. Try to find one that is trading above its initial price. I think it'll be a long search
between right now. Yeah, they're not out there. They're all lower. And that, you know, part of that was the, you know, SPACs got so popular. Let's just bypass that whole IPO thing. We're just going to take our company privately to the public. No disclosure. It's worth what we say it's worth. And those began to collapse. That bled over to the regular IPO market, who's now got the dregs of what was left, they're not doing well. It's not a good environment out there, and IPOs are not lighting up the universe as they once did.
Well, when we take a look at the last couple of years, I think we can determine that there is a big difference between luck and skill, and generally investors make poor decisions. So the bottom line is markets are only efficient as the participants. In the last few years have shown that very few participants are actually rational.
Right, and if the participants are willing to just completely suspend reality and go out on the end of that plank alone, other people will follow them, and that there is nothing efficient about that. There's nothing in there that says, yep, we're all making a rational decision. They're just all, you know, lemmings following each other off the edge of the cliff. And after they're off, it's like, well, this might not have been such a good idea, but it's too late at that point.
So when it comes to investing, confidence is essential. I mean, you have confidence that this initial public offering is going to be worth something a lot more than what you're putting into it someday, and maybe it will be. But low interest rates gave venture capitalists confidence. It gave company founders confidence, gave investors confidence, consumers confidence. I mean, everything's coming up roses when interest rates are zero.
Credit cheap. Get out there and leverage up. Yeah.
But inflation put a wrench in that whole process. And for the first time in a long time, investors are no longer willing to believe every story that comes down the pike.
Right. There's got to be some shred of reality that someone can verify, and it's somewhere, because it looks like, at least hopefully, the days are gone of, you know, we here's how much this picture of a rock is worth, and actually have somebody pony up money for it. Hopefully that's gone for good. That's just bad for markets in general.
So the boom times of this last decade are unambiguously over. The part of the problem with portfolio structure is modeling. And for those of you who have either been on our webinars or listened to us for some time, know that I train advisors around the country, and we have this discussion frequently. Most of them have broker-dealers. And in one of those conversations this last week, the compliance officer was inquiring of the model that the advisor was using. And he said, we don't have a model. We deal with what's happening in the market today. And that's the problem with retirement planning software. Assume that you happen to own some inverse funds because you're pretty committed to a falling market and you want to profit in that environment. Put those inverse funds as your portfolio into the retirement planning software, and guess what? It collapses. It's disaster. It doesn't know. It says you aren't going to make it, period, because there's no adjustment for bear markets in retirement planning software. The only adjustment is you're going to close your eyes, hold your nose, not breathe, not eat or drink until the bear market's over. And then you'll come back up when you break even and you'll take a breath. We don't think that makes any sense, but that's the efficient market theory.
Think about what you just said, Don. If you're looking at that often very expensive financial planning software, there's nothing built in there that says, well, next year you're going to lose 25% of your money. It's not there. Even though that's quite possible with your investment strategy, if you're using the pie chart, they never account for that. They just say, well, put in the return you think you're going to get for the next 30 years on average, and we're going to pretend you get that every year. But they're just pretending. There's no, again, you have to suspend belief in the reality and say, well, I'm just going to pretend I'm going to get 8% every year for the rest of my life. We know for a fact that's not going to happen. There's going to be better years. There's going to be really tough years. But that does not get baked into the software. And that just makes it dangerous.
You remind me of a software package that I used to use until I figured out how it actually worked. And so you would put in the client's current assets, their target retirement date and what they were going to need in and expected capital in order to support them. And so you put that in, and the whole issue was this software will solve for you what you need to do, what your expectations should be. Well, basically, it took your current capital, your future desired capital, and would back into a rate of return. And one of them I remember, it calculated that in order to get from here to there, you need to average 12% a year, no misses, for something like 30 plus years. Well, good luck with that.
Work fine. Yeah, as long as you're getting 12% a year forever. And that's the kind of thing you want to avoid. That's not the kind of a process that you want to base any of your retirement projections on, because they're just not realistic. You're not going to get those linear returns for the rest of your life, but that's what they do. They average it out. They put it out there like you're going to get that forever and then pretend it's going to happen and tell you, well, no, you're on target. Everything's fine. And it's just not. It's just not fine. It doesn't work that way.
If you want to talk to us today, we do have an open number, open line, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. Well,
we should go ahead and get a break, Don, right here. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll go ahead and get out of here. There you go. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have a weekly email newsletter we call the Week in Review. If you'd like to start receiving that, send an email to help@iriradio.com. That is help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line. We need your first and last name in the body of the email. We will get you set up, and you'll begin receiving that on Mondays. It goes out most Mondays. It's really good look at the previous week's news of having to do with finance, give you an idea about what's important and what you can safely probably ignore. So it adds a little clarity to your watching the money flow that week. So again, you can sign up for that by sending an email to help@iriradio.com. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Hey, well, all right, sir. Here we go there. And what are they going to give for? I have a $600 down here now, 10 and now, 25 and now, 35 and now, 50 and now, 60. Will they give me 60 now, 75, 75, another $85 on the bottom there?
$25. Well, computers do most of that bidding today. It's The guys on the New York Stock Exchange floor are pretty much there for show. But when we're looking at the market over this last 5 months and the drop in all sorts of assets, people are beginning to lose some of their confidence that has built up over the last decade, interrupted by COVID, but that was a really fast recovery because of the massive amounts of money that central banks dumped into the economy, and then governments added even more, which has contributed to our inflation problem, which we discussed in length in today's webinar. And we will we'll have that replay posted here within the next day or so. We have to clean the recording up just a bit. But anyway, as we're dealing with the current situation, people are looking at inflation as it impacts their budgets and what they can do with discretionary spending. And discretionary spending issues are starting to hurt the economy. We have three factors that keep our economy afloat, and that's technology, consumer discretionary spending, and financial markets. All three of them are a little sick right now. They're suffering. And the fear is, are we headed into a recession? Well, nobody really knows. There's lots of assumptions. The Fed does not want a recession. Mr. Powell and the other Fed board members, they don't want to deal with that question. They don't want to take the blame for it. And we know the administration doesn't want to take the blame for anything. But the problem that we're facing is the cost of just getting by for the average household is becoming punitive.
It is. With inflation at the rate it is right now, everybody notices all the time, and it really does put a damper on what people are willing to do. You really do kind of calm down with the, you know, with the abandon that was in, like you said, on the crypto markets, on the NFT markets. Everybody was out there just whatever. Let's just dump money on whatever comes along out there. But as soon as it costs you $120 to fill up your tank with gasoline in your vehicle, and now people are like, wait a minute, this is really a different environment we're in here. Things have really changed. You know, my grocery bill is close to doubled. You know, so what do you do now? Well, you hunker down a little bit, and you don't get out there and spend with abandon like you were before. And there's no more COVID stimulus coming, so everyone is going to be kind of hunkering down a little bit and taking a closer look at what's going on. And so, like you said, Don, the boom times seem to be over for now.
Well, the stock market is not an indicator of recession. It's an indicator of other concerns, lower profits, it's assumed lower sales, yep. People, industry can't pass on their costs. Those are concerns there. They aren't necessarily ones that are, a predeterminant to a recession. We do have one recession, quarter right. of negative GDP growth. We need two back to back, and we so far don't have that yet. Concern, there are reasons to be thinking that this is in the making, but so far it's not justified. And when will it show up? So maybe the real slowdown doesn't happen until next year. The market begins to, both investors, Mr. Market, the investors believe that the recession will be short and we will resume a growth pattern, in which case the market will recover. And what we have right now will be a sustained rally rather than a bear market rally that lasts a month and then rolls over and goes to new lows. That's still a possibility, but are both of those events, those outcomes, higher highs or new lows, remain unknown. Nobody knows which way that's going to go. We have to take that one day at a time, one week at a time, one month at a time. The market is dynamic. And the problem with most people's portfolios is they are not dynamic. They are static. They are built on an asset allocation model with 80 or 90 years of average data to just basically plant your feet and pray it all works. And we don't think that makes sense anymore.
It really doesn't. And when you're looking at counting on, the returns of the past 90 years to give you a good idea of what to do with your money today, when you think about that, it doesn't make any sense. What the economy is doing today, what markets are doing today, what's driving business today has got nothing to do with what was going on even 50 years ago, or these days, even 10 years ago. It changes so fast. And you really have to have a portfolio process that adapts to what's going on currently. Otherwise, you just get left behind. And if the market goes south in a big way, you go with it. There's no protection there in that pie chart on the downside. Everything's going to move down together, and it can really, really hurt your portfolio.
So trying to figure out how I survive this current economy and this current market is a common question for investors. And many of them have said, well, I'll quit worrying about the price if I'm getting paid with cash. So give me dividends since I can't have interest. Well, maybe now sure. I can get some interest from the Fed with raising rates. But either event, dividends look pretty attractive. But they still look a little weak sometimes. So what can I do to get bigger dividends? Well, that often leads people to the high yield or emerging market bond arena.
Right.
Both of those are associated with higher risk. Well, we call them high yield because junk didn't market well.
that was too negative. So we're going to take that out. We're going to call them high yield, but they should just call them at least high risk. Because that's the part people forget about, that the reason they're paying those higher interest rates is because there's an excellent chance for default, in which case you get left with nothing. And so you don't want to be there if you're just reaching for yield. If you're just saying, you know what, I can't make it on 2%, I need 6. And so you go, you know, hopping into the junk bond market, well, there's a good chance you're going to get nothing there if things collapse. And again, you cannot ignore that risk. You can't ignore the fact that that could all just go away.
And we look at the high yield exchange traded funds in the United States, and they had a massive rally recently. I mean, it just shake your head and say, somebody's not thinking here. But if that's not enough, you go to the emerging market area, because there you can get even more. But the risk is so much higher. Part of the problem is that as the dollar gets stronger, as it has been, given the Fed's commitment to solve our problem and raise interest rates, that strengthens the dollar, other currencies are weakening. And so many emerging markets borrowed money in dollar denominated debt. So when it comes time to make the interest payment, or heaven forbid, a principal payment or a maturity, they have to go buy dollars, and their money's worth less. The dollar is worth more in their currency. And all of a sudden, they don't have the funds to buy the dollars to make the payment. That's called a default. And you're not going to get your interest, and the bond may in fact be negotiated to zero or renegotiated. The Greek debt from the 08-09 crisis, some of that was negotiated out for 50. I think they had a 100-year bond.
100-year bond, so they did,
your bond is no longer going to be due this year. It will be due in 100 years. So you just hang around and collect your money. You'll be just fine. There'd be no loss at all with that. But most investors, when they look at adding these to their efficient market portfolio, aren't taking this into consideration. They're just looking at long-term averages and saying, hey, this stuff makes money over a long period. Well, except you kind of ignore the defaults where the money disappeared. It went to zero.
And that does happen. That's right. That's the important part to remember. It does happen. It can happen. And in an environment where a strengthening dollar, like you said, Don, where it's going to make it more expensive for especially emerging market companies to repay that debt, which they probably were already on the margins of being able to make to begin with, it makes it really hard for them. And so that's an additional risk that gets dialed into your portfolio that people don't even look at. They don't even consider that. Like you said, they just look at the return. Oh, this return's great. It's a bond. It's safe, right? It's not the same. It's not the same when you get out into the high yield, into the junk bond arena. It really is putting your capital at risk, and you just need to recognize that.
So you have to take, if you're actually in this market, you have to take a look at where is the fund actually lending money. According to JP Morgan, you want to be sure that you don't have much exposure to Sri Lanka, the Maldives, the Bahamas, Belize, Senegal, Rwanda, Grenada, Ethiopia. How about Egypt, Pakistan? Well, there's Russia. And how about Ukrainian debt? I mean, all of that stuff up until recently was offering a much bigger dividend yield or interest payment, and people thought, hey, I need that income, and ignored the underlying risk involved. And if you don't think that risk is real, you have to take a look at these countries who need to upgrade their infrastructure. Well, that sounds good.
There you go.
So they need to borrow money. China becomes a big lender. They have this Belt and Road Initiative. So for years, they've been in Africa saying, you guys need a better port. We'll help finance that. And then when a country like Rwanda runs out of money, cash drawer is empty, China says, the CCP says, well, you know, you owe us money. Well, we'll do a swap. We'll become the owners of your port, and in order to offset the default payments that you owe us, you just throw in another 150,000 acres of your country for us, you know, just to be sure we're still good guys.
Yeah. And if that sounds like loan sharking to you, it's because it is. It's just on a massive internet. It's a massive international scale where China ends up with control of the port that they built, and then a big chunk of the country that they built it in. It's just a scam, but it's a trap that China laid for those countries, and a lot of them are getting caught in it. That's not healthy.
Well, I think we're caught with break time.
You are correct. We're up against our last break of the day here. Again, if you'd like to sign up for our next monthly market update, that's coming up on July 9th at 9 a.m. You can sign up for that by going to IRIradio.com. That's IRIRadio.com. Just head to the webinar page and give the registration link a quick click, and you'll be set for July 9th. And those are very well attended. We always get a lot of great questions from people that are online with us. And so there's a lot of good information. Some of it that we make sure we put in there, they're brand new every month. And then with the questions we get, it just adds to it. So it's a great way to get a little read on what's going on out there in the markets and in the economy. Again, you can register for that at IRIRadio.com. There's still plenty of time to get your question on the board this afternoon. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
So I'm telling you right now, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Hey, you gotta be strong.
Well, that's in life as well as the market. It's in sports that the strong survive. You get through tough times, you got to be strong to do that. The weak bail. And that happens in markets too. One of the things that we have just recently wrapped up in the market is 7 consecutive weeks of decline have finally come to an end. And when that has happened in the past, the S&P 500 has typically moved upward and onward. The problem with that as a data point, making that assumption, is there's only 4 other times in history that we have major bottoms after 7 weekly declines. 1932, well, that doesn't look much like today. 1974, well, there's some similarity there. There was 03, that's the end of the tech bubble busting in March. And then there was 09. So it's really hard to draw the correlation here and say that this rally means the worst is behind us, because we really don't know. We could see an even lower low than we've had recently. When we look at the S&P 500, the low, given the charts that we look at, would suggest we could see it drop to around 3,500, and there would probably be a lot of money flowing in and supporting that, and from that we would call that a rally, giving the opportunity for a new high. But then we may not go there. The only thing we can do is make decisions as the market unwinds itself, or hopefully winds itself back up and moves higher. It is a bit of a spring that sometimes goes boing, you know, it comes undone.
Right. Yeah, there's no guarantee any of these rallies have any real staying power to them, but they are big enough that you really shouldn't ignore them. We got some questions this morning about being back in the market now and how long are we going to be, and just like everything else in the market, you never know. We don't know how long this uptrend is going to stay in place, but it has the potential to be up enough, because this has been a very broad-based bounce here, that it's something that we need our clients to be a part of. But then It makes our job harder, because it becomes, well, you watch every day looking for signs of this thing starting to weaken, because there's every chance that this is not going to new highs yet, but we could be going to new lows. So you have to be willing to get out of the way, but you also have to be willing to participate right now. And that's something that doesn't happen with that pie chart. You just take the good with the bad, and whatever happens, happens.
So this is called the rally to the bottom. The 1929 to 1932, there were 6 rallies on the way down. Only one of them rallied less than 20%, and it was up 15, but the others were all 20 or more. And in 73-74, there were two major rallies, but it took a little more time to unwind. We take a look at the 2000 to 2003. I mean, this is it wasn't quite a three-year bear market, but there were one, two, three, four, five, six big rallies on the way to the bottom of the market. And then 07, 08, we had three rallies on the way down. And every one of those said, oh, it's over. It's over. And then it's not. And
good times are bad, right?
that market, and using the efficient market theory, which we were doing at the time, because that's the way the industry trains financial advisors.
Correct. Is
markets will average themselves out over time. They just leave out the very long time. They will average themselves out.
There you go.
So But investors have a shorter time frame. They always do. And in order to deal with that, you must have a dynamic approach to the market. And we do that by figuring out that the efficient market theory is good in academia. You can pass your tests, you can get your certifications. But when it comes to managing money, if you're sitting across the table from a client, the theory doesn't work all the time. In fact, when it's not working, it can be disastrous. It's really difficult. It's not every market every time.
Yep, they never tell you that. They never tell you that you're actually at risk to take huge losses. Instead, they say, well, over long periods of time, you're really very safe here. But they don't tell you that you may have to sit through a 30, 40, 50% loss of everything you spent your entire life saving in the meantime. And that's, like you said, Don, that's not, no investor will do that. Investors are all humans, and humans will not sit still for that. You can't lose half your money and say, well, I think this is a good idea, let's keep doing it. That's not reality. So you end up not staying with the program, and you bail out. And, you know, that's potentially even worse. You don't have any opportunity to ever make your money back. But the better idea is to protect the downside. And if markets are all bad and bonds are losing money and gold's losing money and real estate's losing money, hold on to some cash and just stay out of the way for a while. And that's one of those things that will never happen in the pie chart. They just don't do that. And so you never get the opportunity to just say, I shouldn't be in this market. There's too much risk.
So one of the sales pitches, the mantra, is if you go to cash, if you raise cash, you'll never get back in the market, and you'll miss out on the best days of return, which is probably true, because the best days occur at the very bottom. After you've lost the maximum amount of money, there's a relief rally of a couple of days. What they never say is if you miss the worst days in the market, you'd actually be better off. And if you'd like some numbers on that, go to our website, iriradio.com, and watch last month's video. We explained that. We've got slides in there and explain the difference that if you miss the worst days and happen to miss the best days, you're actually better off than riding through on a buy and hold market. Buy and hold investment policy. Buy and hold is great for the financial services industry. It may not be the best thing for you. You want more information on how that works? Watch our January webinar. And I actually suggest you page down a couple of pages until you get to January of last year. And I have somebody who calls me who's never really listened to us a lot or watched many of our videos. Those are two essential videos before I want to actually have an engagement conversation with a prospective client, because you must understand the difference between sitting still with your eyes closed in the market and actually having a dynamic process to deal with the changes in the market, and know that process is what works, not a static, strategic sit still because I have 100 years of history and it'll be okay.
Because it may not be okay when you need the money.
Yeah.
And the key thing you just said, Don, is the process part. You have to have a process. We don't move people in and out, our portfolios in and out of the market based on what we're feeling, based on if we're feeling good or feeling afraid of the market. It's a process based on the data that comes out of the market. And that is the only thing that gives you a chance to, you know, get yourself out of the way, get your emotions out of the way, and let the market come to you and do what you can when you can do it. You don't try to overreach. If nothing's there, raise a cash position and wait for a while, but don't just sit around and do nothing because in 50 years it's going to be okay. That's just really not acceptable.
Now, one of the arguments about the market today is that peak inflation is here, and that may well be the case. And one of those indications is that tech companies and some of the growth companies are beginning to lay off people. They've made announcements. Even Tesla says Elon Musk announced this week that he's going to cut Tesla staff by 10%. And there's a freeze on hiring at Amazon. They built too many warehouses. They have too many people on the payroll. They are going to cut staff and close some of the warehouses. The assumptions of internet commerce that were made during the COVID crisis are unwinding. So with more layoffs, the pressure on rising wages will ease. Now, that may mean peak inflation is here. It doesn't mean inflation itself will unwind. There are many other factors that are keeping inflation high. The supply chain is not expected to resolve back to normal for several years. So shortages still abound. We are looking for and I talked about housing. The housing number in the inflation calculation is going to be another year before we see softer prices and fewer sales bringing house prices down. That's on its way, but it's not going to affect the inflation numbers for another year or more out. So peak inflation is probably here. Lower inflation is still some distant time in our future. We're coming up on the end of our time here. So we are about to go unlive. If you want to talk to us during the week, we have a number, 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119. Sign up for our Week in Review, sending us an email, help@iriradio.com. help@iriradio.com. We are out of time. God bless you. God bless your family and the United States of America. We will look forward to next weekend at 11 o'clock.